Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the True Crime and Coffee Podcast, where I, your host, Simone North, talk all things true crime while we drink our coffees to stay calm. Hello, my little detectives. How's everyone hanging? How's everyone doing? Today's been a pretty good day. I am very, very tired, though. I worked today and it was so busy, so I'm very, very pooped. So I'm not gonna ramble today like I do in all of my introductions. Instead, I'm just going to tell you what I'm drinking very quickly, which surprisingly is not a coffee. I feel like I'm breaking the rules of my own podcast. But today's episode, I am drinking a Seagram's, the Jamaican Me Happy flavor. It's so good. And I needed it. I needed it after work. It's summer. Why not? I would love to know what your favorite drink is, your favorite comfort drink, whatever your favorite drink at the moment is. You know, I could over-explain this all day. If you'd want to share that with me, you can always find me on Twitter or Instagram at True Crime Coffee. So, without further ado, let's dive straight into today's case, which is the murder case of Catherine Knight. Alright guys, so before I get into the case, I just wanted to say really quickly that I wrote my notes on paper for this case instead of on the computer this time. So if you hear page flipping, that is me flipping through my notes. I do have a couple pages of notes, and I'm sorry if you can hear that. I record on my phone, so it probably will pick that up. So I'm just giving you a warning before you're questioning what is going on in the background of my podcast. But anyways, diving straight into things, Catherine Mary Knight was born October 24th, 1955, in Tenterfield, New South Wales, Australia, to an unconventional and dysfunctional family. Barbara Rohan, Catherine's mother, had been married with four sons before beginning an adulterous relationship with Ken Knight, a friend and co-worker of her husband. His name was Jack Rohan. Both the Rohan and Knight families were well known in the conservative and rural town of Aberdeen, and the affair caused a major scandal. Now, local backlash that they would face would force them to leave Aberdeen and move to Moree, two of her sons being left with their father and two with their Aunt Sydney. Barbara and Ken would go on to have four children of their own, two of which being twin girls, and the younger of those twins being Catherine Knight. Now in 1959, when Knight was four, Jack Rohan died, and his two boys would be sent to be raised by their mother, Barbara, and Ken. Ken was an alcoholic who openly used violence and intimidation to rape his wife, Barbara, up to 10 times a day. Because of this, Barbara would tell her daughters details about her sex life and how much she hated sex and men. On one occasion, Catherine had complained to her mother that one of her partners wanted her to take part in a sexual act that she did not want to perform. Barbara told her, quote, "Put up with it and stop complaining," end quote. Now, Catherine made claims that she was frequently sexually assaulted by several members of her family, not including her father, which continued until she was 11. Apart from her twin sister, the only person who Knight felt close to was her uncle, who committed suicide in 1969, leaving Catherine devastated and claiming that his ghost would visit her. Later that same year, the family would move back to Aberdeen. During her short time at the Muswellbrook High School, Catherine would become a loner, being remembered as a bully who stood over smaller children. She assaulted at least one boy at school with a weapon and was once injured by a teacher who was found to have acted in self-defense. At the age of 15, Catherine left school without knowing how to read or write. She did, though, obtain a job as a cutter in a clothing factory, and a year later would leave to start what she described as her dream job as an offal cutter at the local abattoir. Now, she would later get promoted to boning, being given her own set of butcher's knives, which she grew a very odd connection to, hanging the knives over her bed at home so they would, quote, always be handy if she needed them, end quote, a bizarre tradition she would continue everywhere she lived until her incarceration. Now, let's get into the marriage between Catherine Knight and David Kellett. Now, Knight met Kellett in 1973, the two both being heavy, heavy drinkers. Now, David's drinking was associated with a slew of traumatic past incidents having, like I said, aided in his drinking. And after losing his job, he found work at the Aberdeen Abattoir, where he would become close friends with Catherine's brother. David and Catherine would begin dating, and she would always back him up when he got into fights. She was known for physically threatening anyone who upset her. Now, the two would marry in 1974, with Barbara, Knight's mother, giving Kellett the following advice. Quote, "The old girl, Knight's mother, said to me, watch out. You better watch this one, or she'll fucking kill you. Stir her up the wrong way, or do the wrong thing, and you're fucked. Don't ever think of playing up on her. She'll fucking kill you." And that was her mother talking. She told me she's got something loose. She's got a screw loose somewhere. End quote. On their wedding night, Knight tried to strangle Kellett, explaining it was because he had fallen asleep after having intercourse only 3 times with her. On another occasion, Knight, while heavily pregnant, burned all of Kellett's clothing and shoes, and later hit him across the back of the head with a frying pan, all because he arrived home late from a darts competition after being in the finals. After this, Kellett fled to a neighbor's house, collapsing in his front yard, and was treated for a severely fractured skull. Catherine would then talk Kellett out of pressing any charges. Now, shortly after the birth of their first child in May of 1976, Kellett would leave Knight for another woman, moving to Queensland. And the next day, Knight was seen pushing her newborn baby in a pram down the main street, violently throwing the pram from side to side. Knight was then admitted to St. Elmo's Hospital, where she was diagnosed with postnatal depression and spent several weeks recovering. Upon her release, Knight placed 2-month-old Melissa on a railway line shortly before a train was due, and then stole an axe, went into town, and threatened to kill several people. A man found and rescued Melissa, and Knight was taken to St. Elmo's again, but apparently recovered, signing herself out the following day. Only days later, Knight slashed the face of a woman with one of her knives, demanding she drive her to Queensland to find Kellett. The woman escaped after stopping at a service station, but by the time police had arrived, Knight had taken a young boy hostage, threatening him with a knife. She was disarmed and admitted into the Morisset Psychiatric Hospital. Knight told the nurses she planned to kill the mechanic at the service station for fixing Kellett's car, and then her husband and his mother when she arrived in Queensland. After being informed of the incident, Kellett left his girlfriend and moved to Aberdeen with his mother to support Knight. Knight was released on August 9, 1976, into the care of her mother-in-law and moved to Woodridge, a suburb of Brisbane, along with Kellett. It was here where she would obtain a job and on March 6, 1984, would have another daughter. Upon returning to work at the abattoir, she injured her back and went on a disability pension, the government giving her a housing commission residence in Aberdeen. Now, let's get into the relationship between Catherine and David Saunders. So the two met in 1986, and months later, he would move in with her and her daughters, though he would hold on to his old apartment. Now, Catherine would become increasingly jealous and suspicious of what he was doing when she wasn't around, often throwing him out. David ended up moving back to his old apartment, leaving Catherine to follow him and beg for his return. As an example of what would happen if he had ever had an affair, Knight cut the throat of his 2-month-old dingo puppy in front of him. She then knocked David unconscious with a frying pan. In June of 1988, Knight gave birth to her third daughter, and she and David would buy a house together. Knight decorated their home with animal skins, skulls, horns, machetes, rakes, and pitchforks. David would end up moving back to his old apartment again after an argument between he and Catherine occurred, where she hit David in the face with an iron before stabbing him in the stomach with a pair of scissors. Knight would become pregnant once again by a former abattoir co-worker, John Chillingworth, in 1990. They were together for 3 years when Catherine left him for a man she'd been having an affair with by the name of John Price. Now, John Price was the father of three, and he worked in local mines, and was liked by everyone who knew him. His marriage ended in 1988, and his two older children stayed with him. In 1998, after Price refused to marry Catherine, she videotaped items he had allegedly stolen from work and sent the tape to his boss, and Price was then, in turn, fired from his job he had held for 17 years. And it was all over out-of-date medical kits that he scavenged from the company rubbish tip. Keep that in mind. It was over something so small, but I guess his boss had no other option but to let him go because he did do something wrong. Now, on that same day, John kicked Catherine out of the house, and the news of what she had done spread around the town. Months later, John and Catherine would rekindle their relationship, though John would not let her move in with him again, and the fighting would become more frequent than ever, and most of John's friends wanted nothing to do with him while he was with Catherine because they did not like her. In February of 2000, a series of assaults on Price consisting of Knight stabbing him in the chest and a fed-up Price kicked her out of his house. In February of 2000, a series of assaults on Price consisting of Knight stabbing him in the chest led him to be fed up and he kicked her out of his house. On February 29th, he took out a restraining order against her to keep her away from him and his children. That same afternoon that he took out the restraining order, Price told his coworkers that if he didn't come home to work, In February of 2000, a series of assaults on Price, including Knight stabbing him in the chest, happened, and he got so fed up that he kicked her out of the house. And on February 29th, 2000, he took out a restraining order against Catherine to keep her away from him and his children. Now, on that same afternoon, February 29th, Price told his coworkers that if he didn't come to work the next day, it would be because Knight had murdered him. Now, despite pleas that he not return home, Price stated that he was afraid that Catherine would kill his children if he didn't. And upon arriving home, Price would find that Knight had sent the children away for a sleepover at a friend's house, though she was not at the house. Price returned home and went to bed at around 11 p.m. after spending the evening with his neighbor. Knight would later go to Price's house while he was sleeping, watch TV, take a shower, have sex, and fall back asleep. Price's neighbor became worried when Price's car was still in the driveway at 6 a.m., and his employer sent a worker to see what was wrong when he didn't show up to work. Both the neighbor and Price's coworker tried knocking on the bedroom window to wake him up, alerting police after noticing there was blood on the front door. At 8 a.m., police arrived, breaking down the door and finding Price's body, and Knight in a comatose state from taking a large number of pills. This would come to be more than just any murder-suicide that you've heard of. This case was truly disturbing, and what Catherine did was truly, truly disgusting and disturbing. What police would stumble on was something that you'd only see in nightmares. Catherine had stabbed Price with a butcher's knife while he was sleeping, and according to blood evidence, he woke up and tried to turn the light on before attempting to escape while Knight chased him through the house. He managed to open the front door and get outside, but either stumbled back inside or was dragged back into the hallway where he died after bleeding out. Knight later went into Aberdeen and withdrew $1,000 from Price's account at an ATM. Price's autopsy would reveal that he had been stabbed at least 37 times, with many wounds extending into vital organs. After Knight killed Price, she skinned him and hung the skin from a meat hook on the architrave of a door. She then decapitated him, cooking up parts of his body and serving up the meat with vegetables. She set up two plates with notes beside them, each having the name of one of his children. Price's head was found in a pot of vegetables, the pot still warm when police arrived, indicating the cooking had taken place sometime early in the morning. Now, Catherine would first plead not guilty, then change her plea to guilty. No reason has ever been given for the After Knight killed Price, she skinned him and hung the skin from a meat hook on the architrave of a door. She then decapitated him, cooking up parts of his body and serving up the meat with vegetables. She set up two plates with notes beside them, each having the name of one of Price's children. Price's head was found in a pot of vegetables, the pot still warm when police arrived, indicating the cooking had taken place early in the morning. Catherine would first plead not guilty and then change her plea to guilty. No reason has ever been given for the guilty plea, and Knight still refuses to accept responsibility for her actions and anything that she did to Price. Now, on November 8th, 2001, Knight was sentenced to life in prison, this being the first time that a life sentence had ever been imposed on a woman in Australian history.
Welcome to Cold Brew, a true crime podcast. I'm your host, Caitlin Brewer, and I'm inviting you to grab your coffee and join me every other Monday as I share these stories with you case by case. From an unsolved small-town triple homicide to an axe-murdering wife, and even an unidentified serial killer that is still out there and could possibly live in my neighborhood. We'll cover facts, theories, conspiracies, and even false media nonsense. You can listen to Cold Brew now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Follow me on social media at Cold Brew Crime to learn more. See you soon.
All right, guys, that is all I have for today's episode of True Crime and Coffee. If you had any comments about the case, you can find me on Twitter or Instagram, like I said. If you have any cases that you'd like me to cover, feel free to shoot me an email at truecrimecoffee@gmail.com. I really hope you guys enjoyed today's case. I know it was a shorter one, but I thought this case was super, super interesting, and I definitely wanted to talk about it. So I hope that you enjoyed listening. As always, have a great rest of your night, and please stay safe.